Welcome back to Cargumentative. I'm your host, Thomas Faulkner from the Sunday Times and Times Live Motoring. And I'm joined today back in the virtual studio with Dennis Dropper from BD Motor News and young Brenwyn Naidu from the Sowetan and also Sunday Times Motoring. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Thomas. Back in the virtual studio, although I am actually talking to you from our real office in Parktown.
Oh, okay. Okay. Excellent. Well, Dennis, you're one of the brave ones. Brenwyn, where are you joining
yeah,
us?
Yeah, no, Thomas, I'm from the relative safety of my my bedroom. Now I had to move from the kitchen because the washing machine was making quite a racket. But I'm in good spirits and happy to be back in studio with you and Dennis.
It's been a while. Dennis, you weren't with us last week, but you're back joining us now. So what's been happening on your side? Anything interesting?
Things are starting to get into gear again in the motoring world. And in particular, it's the clash of the Teutons that's happening. Mm. In the same week, Mercedes launched its updated E63 and BMW its upgraded M5. So nothing has changed power-wise, but they've decided that they needed a little bit of facelifting and updating here and there. So if I get to the Mercedes AMG E63S, which is the only one that we have in this country, we don't have the milder version. And when I say mild, it's still 400 kilowatts plus. So the most obvious change on the vehicle is that it's got that vertically slatted Panamericana grill, which is becoming the look for all AMG models. So it just looks a bit more aggressive, I think, because of that. And it's got the black wheels and it's also got this blacked up package. So as I said before, the power doesn't change, but then it hardly needed to. It's got a 4-liter twin turbo V8 with 450 kilowatts and 850 newton meters, which I'm sure most people will agree is quite sufficient. They've also updated the suspension to give the car a more comfortable ride without blunting its cornering ability.
Well, I was going to say that's an interesting thing that they've decided to make the car more comfortable and they've tweaked the suspension accordingly. And it kind of makes sense to me, you know, because these are cars that probably won't ever be used around a track. So, you know, to enhance their everyday comfort on poor road surfaces just makes a lot more sense because in the past we've seen these sort of big, powerful Uber saloons. They actually struggle to put the power down if the suspension is too hard and too firm. So I think that was a good move by Mercedes.
Yeah, you're right, Thomas. I mean, it makes no sense to make these executive German sedans behave like sports cars, you know, like full-on sports cars, because most of the time they get commuted in, and every now and then you get a chance to play in it. So the more comfortable the suspension, I think, the better. And
exactly.
As I say, Mercedes says that it hasn't blunted the cornering ability. Mm. And much the same applies over in Munich, which has just updated its M5. Once again, we will only get the competition version, the more powerful one, because that's what South Africans tend to like. So all 460 kilowatts and 750 newton meters of it, and 0 to 100 in 3.4 seconds, and a top speed of over 300. So all those nice things. And much like the Mercedes, it's also gotten a slightly upgraded suspension for a better ride quality. And a bit of a facelift just to reestablish some kind of market interest now that we're slowly coming out of this lockdown and people are ready to buy their high-performance toys again.
Yeah. Look, I mean, both these cars, tremendous power, tremendous speed. Which one would you choose?
I suspected you were going to ask that one. You know what? For actual sheer presence,
yeah,
I would probably go for the E63 because I just really like the Panamericana grille. And the picture I'm looking at right now with all the blacked up wheels and everything, it just looks great. But having said that, I really love that M5 competition. And we actually had one. We had the previous generation one on long-term test, And I mean, it's a great car. So it's really tough for me to say. I think just for the looks, I would probably edge towards the Mercedes.
That's a tough one. Huh? That's a tough one. I mean, I'd probably go for the Merc as well. Brenwyn, if somebody offered you one of these cars?
I think hands down for me, the BMW M5. I remember testing the competition and, doing one of those cool features where we introduce it as its four bays and driving the lineage. And, that the new M5 feels like such a complete car. And I actually found the ride quality of the E63 to be just a bit on the harsh side, funnily enough. I'd go with the M5 hands down.
Interesting. And what else has been on your radar? Anything notable to report in terms of car news?
I want to talk about something that South Africans just love, and that is a bucky. South Africans love a good bucky.
Oh, they do. They love a good bucky.
Oh, they really do. So the outgoing Mazda BT50 seemed to be forever stuck in the shadow of the Ford Ranger, to which it owed most of its makeup. And perhaps now in this latest guise of the pickup, which was announced last week, it will have an opportunity to maybe shine in its own right. That said, there is a relation we need to mention. The new BT50 shares its DNA with the next generation Isuzu D-Max, which is by no means a bad thing. I think you guys will agree. I mean, the latter is, after all, quite highly regarded in the category, especially in terms of its reputation for durability. The Mazda will, of course, benefit from an extra dollop of style. It's got all that soul of motion and Kodo influence that's been translated into this double cab body template. And inside, its makers say that occupants will revel in an atmosphere with a premium character. I mean, it certainly looks promising in the images, with the potential of sophisticated embellishments, plush upholstery, and a button festoon center stack punctuated by a color screen, which is just simply a prerequisite in 2020 in cars in 2020. Mazda SA said they haven't yet pinned down timing for the local launch. I think like other manufacturers, everything's really up in the air at this point with COVID. But yeah, looks promising and I can't wait to drive it.
It does. I mean, do you think it'll be able to hold a candle sales-wise with, against the Hilux and the Ranger and the Amarok, Dennis?
It has struggled in terms of its outright sales, but I think that had a lot to do with the fact that it was getting older and the styling was never quite there. The new one looks a lot better.
It does. It does look a lot better. Well, I guess time will tell when it does come out. It'll be interesting to drive it, and it'll be interesting to see how it fares out there on the market. Moving from real cars, I'm going to segue into the virtual realm. I don't know if you guys saw this morning, Ford has announced that they're going to be hosting a Gran Turismo sport competition. It's called hashtag Lockdown Laps, powered by Ford Performance. And it's quite a cool thing. It's going to go on from the 29th of June until the 1st of August. And it's basically a chance for sim races to compete against each other online, using Ford vehicles, of course. And they're going to be a whole host of really cool prizes up for grabs. Qualifying opens on Monday coming up. The 29th. And depending on your time, you get pooled into different groups, so that the racing is fair and competitive. So that's something to look forward to. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but during lockdown, I've fallen down the sim racing rabbit hole. Managed to get a PlayStation and a rig and, a copy of Gran Turismo Sport, and it's been keeping me busy at night.
So are you entering this Ford competition, Thomas?
I am indeed, Dennis. As we know, like in the real world, I do race a classic Ford Mustang, and I've adapted that car's livery onto some of the newer Mustangs available in the game. So I'm going to be taking part in it, and it's going to be my first sim racing competition that I've ever entered. So it's going to be interesting to see how I fare. I don't have high hopes, because I'm a sim racing rookie, but I'm going to give it a bash and see how far I can go.
Well, that will be something exciting for us to watch then.
Exactly, yeah. So,
Is it a spectator sport? Can somebody else just watch it, or do you have to participate?
No, you can. If you've got Gran Turismo, look, I mean, as I said, I'm a complete noob to this, but if you've got a copy of Gran Turismo Sport, you can enter the lobbies and you can watch what's happening without taking part. You can also get, I think via Twitch, you can get a Twitch account and then you can broadcast live your racing exploits. So I need to look into that. I need to speak to some experts and I'll hopefully get that going, so people can tune in and watch me do my thing and hopefully not come stone last, which would be nice.
Awesome. All the best for that, Thomas.
Mm. Brendan, thanks. I think that's it for news, guys. We're running out of time, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with what we've been driving.
Yes, umzansi Salaville is filled with flavor.
But you know that re o batla go tseba gore fame e re mongwaneng, or who secured the latest bag,
or just who's dripping with sauce,
and who's adding the spice.
Jonga yonke into nje,
because if it's hot, then it's definitely in the cheesa pod.
Cheesa!
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Guys, it's that time of the show where we discuss what you've been driving. And Brenwyn, you've been driving a car that I haven't driven yet. I know Dennis has. And it's the all-new Toyota Corolla sedan.
Yes, indeed. I finally got a turn in this dashing new Toyota Corolla sedan. And I can tell you that this is not granddad's Corolla. In fact, my granddad actually had a brown Corolla station wagon back in the day. So
nice.
This new Corolla was pretty much what I expected. Pleasant all around. We can all agree that it just looks fantastic. The Corolla is certainly no longer a wallflower. It is now a Scarlet Pimpernel, and it smuggled me rather comfortably into the borders of Heidelberg last week on my test drive. But it would have been nice if it had the turbocharged engine from its hatchback counterpart. Instead, you get a normally aspirated four-cylinder petrol with a 2-liter displacement. It is paired with a 6-speed manual, and the output on paper is 125 kilowatts and 200 newton meters. The XR model grade iDrive was impressively equipped. It even had adaptive cruise control and a steering assistant that gives just a gentle nudge back on course if you stray towards the lines of the road. It costs 420,500 rand, but the entry-level model kicks off 380,200 rand. And I think it's a good choice if you're the kind of buyer who doesn't want an SUV or a crossover, which you can have for the same money.
It's a good looking car, that. I must say, I have to agree with you that Toyota have really come to the party in terms of exterior styling. And one gets the feeling that we're starting to get the looks of that American Camry, which is quite a good looking car. That's starting to filter down into the Corolla sedan. And you had the two liter naturally aspirated engine, right?
That's right. The 2-liter XR.
With the manual gearbox.
My consumption throughout the week, and I did about 400 odd kilometers, was in the region of 9.8. So a bit heavy.
Yeah, it seems odd to me that they're not offering this car with the turbo engine that you get in the sedan. I mean, in the hatchback. To me, it would be a good engine to offer because you're getting probably better consumption and better torque. I don't know. It's a strange one. Dennis, you had that car on test. What did you think about it?
I did, Thomas. I had the auto version, and I also found that it was a little bit thirsty. I used slightly less than Brenwyn, just under 9 litres per 100, but a long way from the promised 6 litres per 100. And generally, I was impressed. I mean, the CVT transmission isn't my favourite necessarily, A drone's less than others of its ilk, but there is still some droning. But fortunately, you do have a manual mode with pedals on the steering wheel, and you can overcome that, and it, you know, shift gears normally. Mm. But other than that, as you've already mentioned, the looks have certainly come right. It's always been a dull but dependable car, and now there's a little bit of aspirational value in the looks. The engine is in that zone between sort of being pedestrian and exciting. It's neither here nor there, but it's just a perky commuter. It's a lot smoother than the previous generation car, so it's got a nice grown-up feel to it. As I said, the only thing that I really had against it was the rather high fuel consumption, and I'm in agreement with you there that maybe that 1.2 turbo needs to find a home in the sedan.
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely has to do, to average, you know, just over 9 or just under 9 is quite a lot in a car like that, especially in 2020, where you could probably get it down. I mean, geez, I had that 1.2 in the CHR a couple of months ago, and I think I was averaging in the 7s, you know, and that's a bigger car than a Corolla.
I would love to see this is not going to happen, but the return of the diesel. That previous gen Corolla 1.4 diesel was a fantastic car, and I think Tom will agree there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of sad that engine is no longer, because you got really good fuel consumption. You had that nice, easy torque. And Brenman, you were able to drive that car down to Cape Town on a single tank, right?
Yeah, look, gentlemen, I try not to bring that story up anymore because I feel like I've just been, I think that's sort of like my claim to fame in the industry that I once drove. But it did happen, though. It did happen. It's real. And it was great. And I'll never forget that.
Yeah, what a thing, especially now, you know, to get down to Cape Town on a single tank of diesel. What a treat. Moving on from the Corolla, because we have to. Dennis, you've been driving a BMW powered by diesel, 330D.
That's right, yes. And to me, this is the Goldilocks version of the 3 Series range. I mean, I've driven the M340i and also the 320D, both great cars. But if I had to choose one for myself, it would be the 330D. It is just that perfect combination of performance, refinement, and fuel consumption. And I just thought it was a terrific vehicle all around. And, you know, we were moaning about the Corolla using about 9 liters per 100. In this larger, much more powerful executive sedan, I averaged 6.9 liters per 100.
That's incredible.
Wow.
And talk to us about performance. Did you get a chance to do some performance testing on this Beamer?
I didn't put it up against the V-Box at reef altitude, but it is claimed to take just 5.5 seconds from 0 to 100. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, that would have been considered the proper sports car ranks just a couple of years ago.
Exactly.
And the nice thing about it is how this power is produced. So there's no lag. It's just easygoing, and it's so smooth. You know, unless somebody tells you it's a diesel, you'd be hard-pressed to know that you're actually listening to a diesel. So any kind of agricultural feel has been completely just massaged out of it. And it's a car with great finesse, great ride quality. So it just does everything so well. And it's kind of got the market segment cornered because the Mercedes C-Class and the Audi A4, they don't have such powerful diesels. So it's only real rivals are much thirstier petrol versions in a similar kind of price range.
It's always been a good car, that. I mean, I haven't driven a 330D in ages, but I remember taking one, this is a while back, possibly like 2010 maybe, up to Saabye, and, you know, I went up on Longtom Pass, and it was such a good car because, as you said, it's incredibly frugal, but you've got the performance, so you can enjoy it without having to worry about, you know, filling up the tank all the time. Comfortable, refined, really good car. And in terms of pricing, Dennis, how much is that car going for now?
Well, that's going for the princely sum of 883,500 rand.
Okay.
Which is not cheap, certainly.
No.
But if you're looking at the M340i, that's just over R1 million. And the Mercedes AMG C43, which is also a petrol version, but like I said, there aren't other diesels in WhatsApp, and that's also just over R1 million. So in terms of the price per kilowatt and with the fuel consumption thrown in, I think this is quite a good buy at the price.
If I had that kind of money, it would definitely be my first choice, out of those other cars that you mentioned. And it seems like a shame that a lot of the manufacturers out there are now starting to shed their performance diesels. Obviously, because of the whole Dieselgate thing that hasn't been kind to oil burners. So it seems like these cars might be something of a dying breed.
I think you're right. There's quite a negative vibe towards diesels now because of Dieselgate, as you say. Mm. And everybody's going to hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and eventually electric vehicles. But I'm glad that for now we still have these kind of vehicles around. And as I say, that would be my choice in a 3-series range.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I agree with you on that one. I haven't been driving a diesel. I haven't been driving anything German. I've been driving a Japanese warm hatch, I suppose you could call it. And that's the Suzuki Swift Sport. It was launched last year in South Africa. I drove the manual on launch. They had it at Red Star Raceway and I did some hot laps in it. Was very impressed, but it's always different driving a car on track as opposed to driving it on regular streets. And I must say, I was very impressed with how the little Swift Sport performed. It's a car that is fast, but still engaging. You know, a lot of these hot hatchbacks, the limits have become so high that you have to drive them so fast in order to feel part of the driving experience. And I think the Swift Sport is still at a level where you can access all of that power all of the time. So from that point of view, it's a very engaging little car in 2020. Well equipped, comes with everything you want, Apple CarPlay, so you can stream your favorite podcasts like our show. It's a very nice complete package. The automatic gearbox, though, wouldn't be my first choice. I think from a daily commuting point of view, it's fine. But as soon as you start tapping into the performance potential of the Swift Sport, it feels somewhat limiting. There were times where it wouldn't allow you to change up or change down. And then if you did change up early, it would change it back down to a gear. There's a lot of electro-nannying in the software, and I don't think it's as good as it could be. So at this stage, I'd be inclined to take the manual.
Yeah, of course, the manual is also R20,000 cheaper, so it's a win-win situation. I'm with you there on the manual with a car like that, because it's got that kind of cheeky, nippy character, and you want to push it a little bit. So it's not really... I mean, it is a car you can commute with. What I'm saying is that it just commutes with such fun and you feel like you want to drive it, not just point it.
Exactly. I mean, you feel part of the car. And as I said before, I mean, that's something that's kind of falling by the wayside in modern vehicles where they've become so aloof thanks to technology and, insulation that you kind of really feel part of the driving experience. And that's where the Swift still shines. I drove it a lot. I took it out to Michaelisburg and beyond and really gave it a good thrashing. And what also surprised me was the fuel consumption. I did over 300 kilometers in a couple of days and I was averaging 7.8. And a lot of that driving was hard driving, flat out exploiting the car. So not only is it fun, it's affordable fun. And that's important.
Yeah, for sure.
Last year, on assignment for my colleagues at Ignition TV, we took the Swift Sport and the Abarth 5952 Red Star Raceway for a little showdown. Mm. I think it was a foregone conclusion, primarily because the Swift costs well, like well over 100,000 rand less than the ABBA.
Mm.
Of course, roomier and quicker, even though on paper it had the lesser output, the far more pleasant car. And the manual, I mean, it's a nice gearbox, although I felt as though the shifts could have had a more sort of direct quality to it. It could have been the unit that we had, but they did sort of err on the sloppy side.
Yeah, well, look, I mean that Abarth is not a particularly good car, and I just can't believe how much they charge for that thing. It feels outdated, horrible gearbox, makes a lot of noise, not particularly fast, terrible seats. I actually hated that car, to be honest with you.
I know you're not a big fan of that ever.
I'm not at all. So yeah, Suzuki Swift Sport, very impressive. Great little drive, this car, if you're looking for something that's fun and affordable. I think that's all we have time for in this section, guys. So we're going to have a quick break and we'll be back with you guys shortly.
Join me, Nicole Engelbrecht, your host on True Crime South Africa, a weekly podcast that covers both solved and unsolved South African true crime cases.
Welcome back to Cargumentative. Now, as we all know, lockdown is easing and regular life seems to be getting back up to speed, and people will be buying cars again. And a good way to purchase a vehicle is through an auction. And Dennis, you told me that you're working on a piece that kind of, tells people a little bit more about car auctions and, what to look out for and how to behave.
That's right, Thomas. Well, obviously, COVID-19 lockdown has been economically devastating, forcing many consumers to seek cheaper cars. So auctions are one way that buyers could score a good bargain. You could pick up a vehicle a lot cheaper than buying it from a dealer, because auctions are, after all, where many car dealers source their stock before marking up the price and sending it to you. So in effect, by going to the auction yourself, you're taking out the middleman. But an educated consumer is a happy consumer. So if you have no previous experience in bidding, it's a good idea to arm yourself with some knowledge before going. So at the moment, car auctions are being conducted online, but you still are able to go and have a look at the vehicles. So you can't test drive them. That's always been in one of the auction rules, but you can go and start the car and play with the controls and make sure that it's not spewing oil and things like that. Mm. So, yeah, in Motor News this week, we're just publishing a piece or giving people some advice on what to do. And the main advice we can give is just that make sure that you know what you're buying. Get as much of the vehicle history as you possibly can so that you're not going to end up buying a lemon. Because the one major part of buying on auction is that the cars are footstoots, which means as is. So auctions don't conform to the Consumer Protection Act in the same way as when you're buying from a car dealer. So as long as the auction house has told you, look, this is where the car comes from, this is where it's been, you buy it, that car becomes your problem.
Interesting. Okay, so you mentioned that in terms of test driving, you don't get that hands-on, feel that you would do if you went to a car dealership.
Correct, and that's partly the reason why you are paying that markup that the dealers putting on it, because they've presumably gone through the car's history and made sure that it's all in good nick. Although that's not always the case. As no. Brenwyn's consumer clinics will tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, interesting. Well, that is a very important thing to take into consideration, because you don't want to pay the cash and then find you've got something that is in need of repair or has a major problem. So yeah, and that article is coming out in Business Day Motor News this Thursday.
That's correct, yeah, the 25th of June.
Okay, well, that's something to definitely look out for. Moving on from auctions, Brenwyn.
Yes.
Anything happening on your side in the future that's worth knowing about?
Just two quick things on my radar. Tomorrow, I'm taking my the long term VW Polo GTI into the dealership for an inspection. I'm going to leave it there because it's been squeaking and sort of making some really interesting mice like sounds that have been emanating from the rear of the cabin, which I mentioned in my updates previously. Get that checked out. And then I'm going to type up a listicle on the best-selling used sport utility vehicles under 200,000 Rand and with less than 100,000 hairs on the odometer. So I think between that great piece on auctions and this shortlist, buyers will be suitably equipped to make some good purchasing decisions this week.
Well, Brenwyn, those are definitely worth looking out for as well. From my side, I'm going to be doing a journey into the world of electric cars and basically looking at if they really are as green as people say they are or think they are, going into the manufacturing process, the mining practice that is involved in mining all the minerals that we need for making them and the battery packs. And so that's going to be quite an interesting one. There's a lot to consider when it comes to electric vehicles. And then other than that, just brushing up on my GT sport skills because, as I mentioned before, Ford's got this challenge that's going to be happening from next week onwards. And yeah, keen to try and do well in that. Listen, guys, we're out of time. Thanks again for joining me in the virtual studio. Again, sound quality is not the greatest, guys. We apologize, but yeah. So from me, Thomas Faulkner, thanks for joining us again on the show. Dennis, Brenwyn, thanks for coming along. Tune in again next week. We'll be back with another episode of Cargumentative. Until then, stay safe. Wow.